Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Are you looking for some encouragement for your day? Because if you are, you've come to the right place. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Thank you for listening. 888-914-9149. We have lines open. That's kind of unusual. Wouldn't you say, young Cyrus? Normally, the phone lines start jamming up pretty quickly.
They'll be coming in any second now.
Yeah.
But now is your chance.
That is true.
To get in the queue early.
Yes, that's true. The earlier the better. The more likely we will be able to get you on the air. Oh, for your good to know file, moms especially, if you're going to be buying dolls for the girls, Mattel is introducing a transgender Barbie. Just thought you might want to know about that. The National Catholic Register has got an article about it. I heard that derisive chuckle.
I don't know if I should say anything. I mean, technically, aren't they all?
Oh, let's talk about that. Well, wait a minute, because Barbie was a real phenomenon back when it came out. The Barbie that most people know about back in the 60s, because it wasn't anatomically correct, but it was more anatomically correct.
Okay.
Let's put it that way. It was more anatomically correct than the typical doll that girls would play.
It was such a hit that they threw some camouflage on it and called it G.I. Joe.
Now, careful.
Careful. I know. Yeah. I'm just playing. They're called action figures for boys. That's what I played with, action figures. But I do remember my mom making fun, being like, oh, you got your dolls? I'm like, Mom, they're action figures.
Yeah, you don't want to call them dolls, not with a guy. No. But they were, okay, so granted, in the 1960s when I had the G.I. Joe line of 11.5-inch dolls, they were dolls, by Hasbro. They were super popular. And I remember one Christmas, it must have been Christmas of 1968, where my parents bought me the G.I. Joe space capsule. And I had endless fun with that. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about transgender Barbie dolls. They've released this first transgender Barbie doll modeled after transgender Orange is the New Black actor and activist, whoever, dressed in oxblood red ball gown made of faux leather top and tulle skirt. The ladies would know what a tulle skirt is. I don't know. T-U-L-L-E. I don't know what that means. A sparkly silver bodysuit underneath. It's on sale May 25th, this past May 25th, $40. I didn't know that Barbie dolls sold for that much money. On Mattel's website, the doll's inscription reads, as a four-time Emmy-nominated actress, Emmy-winning producer, and the first transgender woman of color to have a leading role on a scripted TV show, this person uses her voice to amplify the message of moving beyond societal expectations to live more authentically. So, they also... Yeah, they also did a tribute collection honoring Lucille Ball and Queen Elizabeth. I wonder how Queen Elizabeth feels that there's a Barbie doll with her likeness. I wonder how the royal family feels about that. I don't know. But anyway, so just FYI, Mattel is now rolling out the transgender issue. Now, to that point, now this is not exactly to the point, but it's kind of partly related. On my Twitter feed, at Patrick Madrid, I posted a picture yesterday. You might have seen it, young Cyrus, if you've been looking at my Twitter feed yesterday. But I posted a picture of, you know, what appeared to be a mom and a dad smooching. And their two daughters, one who looks like she's maybe 4 years old, the other one might be 6 or 7. And they're giving the natural, normal reaction that young kids have when they see mom and dad smooching, or anyone else for that matter. And they're kind of like, there's an exaggerated gross out kind of facial expression. Like, the one girl's got her tongue stuck out. The other girl's kind of wincing. And I have seen this look on children's faces forever. It's just a natural, normal. It's cute, isn't it?
I love embarrassing my children.
When you kiss your wife.
Right.
Uh-huh. So what I put on this tweet was, this is a typical normal reaction of young children seeing a typical normal public display of married love. They're still blessedly innocent and far too young to be apprenticed into the world of sexual activity by wicked teachers and other adults who'd seek to rip away their innocence. And the Barbie Mattel transgender Barbie is another example of, in this case, corporate America wanting to do that. Mommy, why is this a man doll who's dressed like a girl? Do you really want to have to explain that to your 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 3-year-old? But they want not only for you to have to explain it to them, they want to introduce your children into that world big time. So,
but their kids are, they're being bombarded with this in everything they're watching. It's everywhere. If they're watching some Disney program, yep, they're seeing it. If they're watching Netflix, they're certainly seeing it. There's only one doll in the whole world that anybody needs, and that's the Patrick Madrid doll.
That's something up with which I cannot put.
Hey, that's pretty good. How did they...
Na, 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 na.
Oh, that's a new one. So you did a firmware update on that doll.
Yeah, well, these are random. So, you know, every once in a while, a new one just pops up. It's okay. Like, oh, I didn't know that.
But when you do the firmware update, apparently they download more phrases.
Who is this Drew of which you speak?
There's the old favorites are still there. There might be some new ones. But...
I hope my wife is listening.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Is that on the show?
We're short on time, but welcome.
It's a pull string. It's random.
We're always short on time.
I hope my wife is listening right
now.
Hey,
there you go.
Yeah. Well, so what cabinet do you keep that doll in? Because it must be locked away when the show is not happening.
There's only one. I never see it. There's only one, and it's priceless. And so I keep it secret, and I keep it safe.
You don't want anyone else. You don't want someone to break that doll.
I do not want someone to break this doll. I mean,
I will
Patrick
file
Madrid,
a lawsuit.
It's a Patrick Madrid action figure, a pull string action figure.
I will file a lawsuit if Mattel tries to come out with a transgender Patrick Madrid doll. I promise you that. There will be lawsuits flying. There will. You think I'm joking? I don't want Mattel to even get any ideas.
Yeah, I don't want that picture in my head. There's just a flash of Patrick Madrid doll.
Let's move on. Yeah, all right, let's move on. Yeah. Put the doll back in the cabinet. 888-914-9149. Now, this is interesting because it ties into yet another issue, and that is childhood memories. Interesting article here at The Conversation about why you can't remember being born, why you can't remember learning to walk or saying your first words. And they've taken some scientific studies in hand, and they're looking at why is it that we seem to have this kind of amnesia after about 3 years old, or right around 3 years old, 2 to 3 years old, is when we can begin to sort of retain memories that you will remember later in life. So, for example, Cyrus, what's your earliest memory that you can think of, going back as far as you can remember?
I don't know. They're just like flashes, or it's like everything's behind this curtain or something. I can't, off the top of my head, I'd have to think about it. I don't know.
Okay, so let's try it this way. Can you remember anything going on in your life, any memories from when you were 5 years old? I've got plenty.
Yes, I think there are some. It's all
a million memories from five. Really? How about when you were four? Probably.
No. Most of my memories are after kindergarten.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I can remember back to about 3 years of age. I think that's pretty typical of most people, can remember back to about 3 years of age. And before that, I'm blank, like most everyone else. I don't remember anything. And in what this article says is that infants indeed do form memories. In fact, they give an example of like short-term memory where all the moms and dads who have had little kids, they know what this is like, where you put the mobile above the crib. So the baby's lying on her back and she sees this thing above her that's got the little animals or the colored shapes or something like that. And they talk about how if you tie a little string or something to the baby's leg, then she learns very quickly that when she kicks her foot, the mobile moves. Okay, very simple thing. And then once the child learns that, then that memory is formed, And she or he realizes, well, every time I kick my leg, the mobile will move. So I'd like to do that more often. And before you know it, parents have to buy a new mobile because the first one is so thrashed from all the kicking. But that's an example of how little kids, like 6 months old to 18 months old, how they have memories. But the question remains, and they haven't really solved the issue, but they just say that children at that young age, they form memories, but they're not memories that will last later on because, and I think this is the essence of the article, because they don't yet have a sense of self-awareness. Like if you show a picture, you show a baby himself in the mirror below a certain age, it's like, say, below 18 months of age, they just think they're looking at another baby when you put babies in front of a mirror. But long about, say, 18 months to 2 years of age, scientists have noticed that that's where little children begin to become aware that that is them. They realize, oh, that's me. And they don't have that concept of me, apparently, before that. So that seems to have something to do with why the memories that they're forming before they reach that threshold where they can begin to kind of self-identify or be self-aware. Before that, although they have memories of sorts, they're not memories that last beyond that. At least that's the theory that they're pointing out, which I think is interesting. And that goes, if you want to follow the circle, that sort of goes back to this issue of how deeply damaging it can be to children when they're very young, and gender ideology and other problems of a similar nature are being forced upon them. Because especially when they're toddlers, you know, when they're now at the point where they can begin having these memories, you can really mess up a kid's mind by when they're so malleable and still trying to come to terms with, I am a person, I am me, I'm distinct from everyone else. And now you're cramming in all of these terrible images and ideas and thoughts that have nothing to do with childhood at all and takes away their innocence. That was the essence of the picture that I posted on Twitter. Is to show, you know, this reaction is born out of innocence. These children are innocent. So for them to see mom and dad kissing is like, ugh, gross, I don't want to see that. I saw it with my kids. I see it with my grandchildren. I see it with just children in general. When you're out and about, it's a normal reaction. But when, thanks a lot, Mattel, you know, when these little kids are indoctrinated into the world of drag queens and all the other insanity, it does, I have to believe it does tremendous psychological damage to them that will only be coming to the surface in later years. So yet another reason when you are shopping, don't buy the transgender Barbie. Not that anybody listening to this program would do that. But if somebody says, hey, my daughter got a transgender Barbie, I wouldn't celebrate that. In fact, that might be a good teachable moment to tell that person that's not a great idea. Yeah. 888.
You want to get that Patrick Madrid action figure. It comes with a rosary, comes with a little duct tape. You know, the accessories. Yeah. There's a little comb so you can comb the beard. All right. Well, the mustache. My bad.
It better be a very strong comb.
And right. Yeah, that's not what prone I'm to breaking. For. Come on, Mattel.
No, I will not allow Mattel. Mattel is not a candidate
they're
for
out.
The Patrick
okay.
Madrid action figure. By the way, it's the Patrick Madrid action figure with Kung Fu grip. You have to add that
that's
part
right.
in there.
That's right.
What holds the mustache comb. That's what holds the taco. See, the accessories
and the
are
taco.
Important.
Of course it has of course it comes with a taco.
Patrick Madrid action figure with Kung Fu grip. Taco's not included. That sounds like a taco's sold separately.
I want to see this. Someone out there is really good with Photoshop. Please make that happen. Please.
I can just imagine. 888-914-9149. Before we go any further, I just have to share one other item. If you saw Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, this might ring a bell, but this is a real story. It actually happened. Two workers at a chocolate factory in Pennsylvania, they had to be rescued from a vat of chocolate on Thursday. Rescue crews responded to the Mars M&M factory in Elizabethtown around 2 p.m. local time.
Dive in, save him!
Oh, it's too late.
Too late!
He's had it now. The suction's got him.
That's from the movie.
He can't swim.
There's no better time to learn.
More than two dozen emergency personnel arrived at the factory on Brown Street. You get it? Chocolate? Brown Street? Get it?
Don't just stand there. Do something! Something!
About 12 miles outside of Hershey, rescue crews declined to comment. A spokesperson for Mars Wrigley told CNN, "We are actively managing the situation and our primary focus is supporting emergency teams on site. The rescue began after two workers fell into a tank of chocolate. At the they fell." And the word "fell" is not in quote marks. So one wonders, did they fall on purpose? That chocolate looks really good.
Augusto, sweetheart, save some room for later.
Okay.
Okay. I'm getting a vibe here that you are not a fan of Willy Wonka.
No, I liked Willy Wonka. When I was in the fourth grade, I think it was, the teacher read us the book before I ever saw the movie.
I'm throwing you gold here.
Okay. You are?
Chocolate gold.
The two workers were not hurt, the dispatcher said. I'm just trying to do a show here, that's all. The dispatcher said that two workers were not hurt. They were not floating around in chocolate. The chocolate in the tank was only about waist high, but neither of the employees could get out of the tank under their own power. Fire crews on the scene ruled out pulling them out of the tank directly once they arrived on the scene. Instead, rescuers decided to cut a hole in the side of the chocolate tank to get them out. This seems like a lot of extra work. The first worker was pulled out of the tank, followed by the second worker that afternoon. They had to go to the hospital. And the spokesperson for Mars Wrigley said, "We can confirm both people have been taken off-site for further evaluation. We're extremely grateful for the quick work of the first responders." Must have been a very sticky situation all the way around. I am a dad, so dad jokes are appropriate. How about this? Let us clear our minds of the fun, and then we'll get to work. 888-914-9149. If you want to read any of these articles, they're posted for you on the show page, relevantradio.com/Patrick. Just click on the lower right hand where our Twitter feed is embedded, and you'll find it all there. I'll be right back. Change the world.
There's nothing to it.
Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com.
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
We are back. Thanks for listening. The phone number is 888-914-9149. Got a note here from Kevin, who's cross with us, maybe more cross with you, Cyrus. He says, "Would you begin your calls by screaming loud into your microphone?" No, why not? You blast music very loud to the point of audio clipping at times. And then you turn it up louder, he says. Sometimes you do this after ending the previous segment that had a low audio level. He says, "I turn up the volume to hear the caller, and then you blast music." Well, Kevin. All right, we'll try to do better, Kevin. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Jim now in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Hello, Jim.
How you doing, Patrick?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Great. Love your show, especially the humor. Popcorn Colonel.
Thank you.
I definitely agree with Cyrus on the action figure as well. My question is, I rely on the preface of the St. Joseph's Bible for interpretation. Mm-hmm. And it talks a lot about, I think it's item 20, about Genesis. When in the book of Genesis, they're talking about creation and the firmament and some specifics like that. And the guidance mm-hmm. In the Bible is to take some things literally and other things not, like, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering if you have any additional resources to help discern between when to take things literally and give them different literary forms in the in general.
Well, it just so happens that I think you and I are talking about the same edition. So the St. Joseph edition of the New American Bible, is that the one that you have?
Yep.
Okay. Personally, I would not recommend those notes as the best guidance to understand Scripture. And the reason is that they're riddled with, it's a school of biblical scholarship that it's alive and well today, and it's been around since the early part of the 20th century, which takes a, for lack of a better term, a kind of demythologizing approach to Scripture. And it's under the guise of serious biblical scholarship, and they are serious biblical scholars. I don't mean to impugn their credibility as scholars. They know their stuff. But the hermeneutic that's applied there, and that's just a word that means the interpretive principle, the hermeneutic that's applied tends to be one of deconstruction. Let's deconstruct the quote-unquote mythology surrounding the Bible. So, excuse me, a common example of that would be to say, well, you know, Jesus didn't really, like, you know, do a miracle in that sense, like multiplying fish and loaves to feed 10, 12,000 people. The real miracle was that people shared their food with each other. Now, that, of course, is not what the text says. The text says that the people were hungry. Jesus saw that they were hungry because they had been there listening to him preaching all day, and they were hungry. And this is in the middle of nowhere. This is on the grassy slopes in the hills on the north side of the Sea of Galilee. And so Jesus, we're told, turned to the apostles and said, give them something to eat. And the apostles said, Lord, where are we ever going to find enough food to feed all these people in such a deserted place? And then, of course, well, what do you have? And they produce a few loaves of bread and a couple of fish. And the Lord says, this is enough. And he multiplies this and he feeds all these thousands of people. This is a miracle. And everybody was agog, and they were astonished that there were 12 baskets of food left over. That's how super abundant this miracle was. So back to your question, one of the problems in this school of biblical scholarship is that it seeks to, quote unquote, demythologize such things and say, well, that, you know, that didn't really happen. Or, you know, Jesus didn't really say, upon this rock I will build my church, because that's a more developed theological term that you don't really see entering into the vocabulary of theologians until later. So Jesus couldn't really have said that. You know, they sort of skip over the part that Jesus is God and things like that. Or you'll see this in the preface to it's the introduction to the gospel according to St. Matthew. And paraphrasing here, it just says, well, you know, Matthew didn't write this gospel, but for the sake of, you know, conformity or for the sake of, not conformity, for expediency, we'll just say that Matthew wrote this. But we know Matthew didn't really write this. There's no way he could have written it, but we're just going to say Matthew wrote it. Things like that. And the problem is that they're interspersed amidst other things that are truly insightful and truly helpful. And so for me, I find that approach, that hermeneutic of suspicion, the hermeneutic of demythologizing, to be problematic. And especially in the case of people who are not really trained, or they don't really have any background with which to apply to these things to say, well, this doesn't sound quite right, or this doesn't really fit the church's traditional teaching on this issue. So that's why I never use the notes in the New American Bible. I mean, they're there. I might look at them, but I don't use them as an authoritative source. Rather, I would consult a commentary, for example, such as the Catholic Commentary on Holy Scripture by Dom Bernard Orchard, a Benedictine scripture scholar. And it's a massive tome, extremely meticulously footnoted. That would be one. And there are others. And I'm quite willing to consider the points that are made in other Bible commentaries that may not be exactly the way I might look at something. But if you want a kind of a big picture view that will show you how, and in some cases, why these problems exist in some of the Bible commentaries, I would begin with a book that was co-authored by Dr. Scott Hahn and Dr. Ben Weicker, and it's called Politicizing the Bible. I think Ben Weicker is the co-author. It's called Politicizing the Bible, and what that book does is it delves into the history of the historical critical method, how it emerged, in scholarly circles, both in Protestantism and in the Catholic Church, how it made its way into the mainstream through notes in Bibles and commentaries and things, and a lot of the damage that was done as a result, and why the people who were seemingly the architects of this, what were their reasons for wanting to do this? What was, did they have an agenda that they were seeking to promote? So that book is very helpful. Now, there's a follow-up to that book that Scott Hahn and I think Benjamin Weicker wrote, and I'm just blanking on the title, but if you find the one, you'll easily find the other. So if you're looking for kind of an analytical overview of this issue, those books would help. Also, for somebody maybe who doesn't have any background in scripture study or anything like that, which is most people, I would recommend books by Father William Most, M-O-S-T. He was a scripture scholar, and I believe I talked about him in just the last week or so. He taught scripture in exegesis at Loras College in Dubuque, Iowa. And he has two books in particular. He wrote many other books, but two in particular that I find found helpful. One is called Free from All Error, and that is a book, and in that book he explains very clearly, what is the church's dogmatic teaching on the inerrancy of Scripture? What is the church's stated position on this issue? And not just once, but in councils and papal comments or papal encyclicals, etc. The second book is called Catholic Apologetics Today. And in a chapter-by-chapter format, he takes up some of these specific kinds of arguments that you'll find, for example, in the notes of the New American Bible. Take, for example, that Noah is not a real historical figure. Noah's flood didn't really happen. And Jonah and that story, that this was not something real. This is more just like a fable. And so he takes those kinds of arguments, and then he applies the tools of sound biblical scholarship to these claims, and he debunks them, or at least he shows a clearer and more accurate way of understanding these issues. So I found that helpful as well. So those would be some suggestions, Jim. I hope you find them helpful. I have. Thank you. Let's go to Chris now in Temecula. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I had kind of a serious issue that came up with my daughter. She's, 16 years old, and she has real bad, time of the month, right? Really bad cramps.
Okay.
She gets nauseous, right? So we finally took her to the doctor, and it was a big, long meeting. I actually wasn't in it. It was my wife. But ultimately, they came back, and they said, the best thing to do is to get on, this medication, quote unquote. And basically, we're talking about the pill. And, so with my wife, it's like, well, we're not, we're Catholic, and that really kind of goes against, all of our beliefs. And so I just know I've listened to the show for a long time, and I definitely appreciate all of the advice that you give. Mm-hmm. And I know that you've talked about this in the past, and I was just, there's got to be alternates, alternate methods, alternate type of medication out there. And so I'm just looking for a little advice. That's all.
Sure. Let me first of all just answer a couple quick questions. So you said that this is a teenage girl, and this is not for the purpose of birth control, right? This is for the purpose of clearing up whatever the health problems are?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Well, let me begin by offering you a resource that will give you a lot of specific information I think you'll find helpful, and that is a book called Life Issues, Medical Choices, Questions and Answers for Catholics. And it's written by Dr. Janet Smith and Dr. Chris Kazor. They're not medical doctors, they're PhDs. But this is one of the topics that is taken up in this book. Is it morally permissible to make use of a prescribed contraceptive in a scenario like the one that you're describing? Now, the principles of moral theology that apply here, Chris, would be that if it's being taken for the purpose of preventing conception, that would be seriously immoral and should not be done. Now, presumably... Right. I know it's a delicate topic, so I'll just kind of skirt around it in to be discreet. If a girl 16 years of age is not sexually active, and there is a legitimate medical reason for taking that hormone pill to regulate or clear up some physical problem, that would not be immoral because it's not being intended for an immoral purpose. So in a case like that, if that's all that really, if that's it, if that's all it's for, and you have moral certitude that she's not sexually active, in which case it would be a problem, obviously, because the pill is very often abortifacient, and that's a whole other moral problem. But if it's simply to clear up a health issue, then it wouldn't be immoral to do that. Now, there may be alternatives, and this book, Life Issues, Medical Choices, may indeed have some things in the footnotes that would be useful to you. Also, I would recommend the National Catholic Bioethics Center, ncbcenter.org is their website. And they would have a lot of information on this, including in their quarterly journal, which I've subscribed to for many years, the National Catholic Bioethics Quarterly. And without doubt, there are any number of articles on this very topic by physicians and moral theologians that you could read if you wanted to go more in depth. So I want to refer you to the experts and what they have to say on the topic. But to distill it down and to be repetitive, if it's for a legitimate medical purpose and it's not intended to be contraceptive, and especially if she's not sexually active, it would not be immoral to use that.
Yeah, that's a big relief, just because, I mean, that's definitely the situation for us. And but I was just so concerned about that. And but no, that's great. Perfect. Great resources. I appreciate that very much.
You're welcome. I hope that's helpful to you, Chris. And I would not be at all surprised. I have no expertise at all in this area, but I would not be surprised if there were alternatives to taking the hormonal pill. Because here's one of the problems. The pill has lots of negative side effects for the woman. And there have been some who have sought to draw an association or a correlation between taking the pill and later on getting things like breast cancer. So those are things that people have been looking into, and to whatever extent there is a correlation, I'd have to leave it up to, you know, the scientists to make that case. But I'm aware that there is a school of thought that says that there is a correlation. So I personally would try to find an alternative to that before I would let one of my daughters do that. If that was the only choice and there was no way around it, all right, I guess so. But if there were other choices, especially choices that did not involve synthetic chemicals and hormones that could damage her body, I would do everything I could to try to avoid that. So check out the National Catholic Bioethics Center, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Elizabeth in Ironwood, Michigan. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. So I'm wondering about the new transgender Barbie. Mm-hmm. What makes her transgender? Because the last time I played with Barbies, Barbie and Ken didn't have lower genitalia.
That's true.
I mean, so what are you going to explain to the child about what makes a transgender?
Well, it's all about the person it's modeled on. It's a man who's a drag queen who goes by the name Laverne Cox, C-O-X. And
yeah,
he's
but
an actor.
Presumably most children aren't watching Orange is the New Black. I mean, I don't know, maybe liberal kids
maybe.
Are, but I mean, how is the child even going to know? You know, I looked up after you said this on the radio, I looked it up and an article from Time from 2019 came up on Mattel releasing their first gender fluid doll. Mm-hmm. And in the article, it mentions that one of the kids in the focus group, an 8-year-old who considers himself gender fluid. Same thing. How does an 8-year-old even know what gender fluid means? I don't even know what gender fluid means.
I can tell you. Gender fluid means that one day you feel like a woman, the next day you don't. You feel like a man or something else. Two-spirit, maybe. So the fluidity part means that you can make it up as you go along. And whatever you feel like at any given moment is whatever your gender is, and people have to respect that. So to your question, Elizabeth, how does a child know that? Well, I mean, I think the only way that I can explain it, because I'm certainly not defending this at all, but it's all over the box. So when the child gets the doll for her birthday and she sees that this is about a drag queen, "Mommy, what's a drag queen?" "Oh, a drag queen's a man who dresses up as a woman." oh, this is a man who's dressed up as a woman Barbie doll? Yep, that's what it is. So sure, there's probably some assembly required in terms of explaining to the child a little bit more. But once they're sufficiently old enough, they can understand because they can read the box. And it'll tell them, this is a trans Barbie.
Yeah. It's all just getting insane.
I agree with you. I agree with you. It's getting insaner and insaner.
It is. Yeah, yeah, this weekend here in my little town in the upper peninsula of Michigan, right across the street from me is the city square, and it is Gay Pride weekend, all weekend long. So I'm going to be listening to the activities. I live here, so I'm going to be listening and viewing the activities whether I want to or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. They will make their presence felt, I'm quite sure. Well, Elizabeth, thank you. I appreciate the call, and I share your perplexity at how crazy things are getting in this world. But you know what's so weird is that there are parents out there who are going to rush to the stores to buy these dolls because they want to indoctrinate their kids. I can't understand that. I don't understand it because eventually all the parents, like everyone and the rest of us, will have to give an account of their lives. And those who are parents are going to have a special accounting to give to God as to how they did well or poorly in raising their children. I have a feeling that if you're giving your daughters or sons, for that matter, transgender Barbie dolls, it's part of a bigger problem. Thanks. 888-914-9149. Quick timeout. We'll come right back to your phone calls. The number again, 888-914-9149. Also, I have a scientific approach article to why some people think they see ghosts and demons. Have you ever wondered what science might say about that? I'll tell you on the other side of this quick timeout.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. You can join the conversation by calling 888-914-9149.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
Welcome back. I have a note here from Margaret. Maybe it's Margaret Ann, I'm not sure, listening on our KNEH affiliate up in Helena, Montana. So first of all, thank you for sending this note, Margaret Ann. She says, before Jesus redeemed my compulsive overeating through the Holy Eucharist and rigorous adherence to a 12-step program, I was imprisoned by gluttony, just as other souls can be imprisoned by greed or lust, etc. And yes, obesity was one of the consequences. Let me just say that the pain of those who struggle with overeating and with various other forms of troubled eating is unfathomable. I hope in the future you guys won't joke if this topic comes up again. Instead, I invite you to demonstrate the kind of sensitivity and compassion you typically show to other frequently marginalized outcast sinners, criminals, those who have had abortions, porn addicts, etc. And check out St. Thomas's examination of conscience on the seven capital sins in the Summa. Those questions can help people like I was to pinpoint and confess our sinful actions and receive the fullness of sacramental grace, healing, strengthening, and enlightenment. Sadly, she says, our church is too often silent about this sin and misery. As you and the caller both pointed out that day, have you ever heard mention of gluttony in even one homily? I love your show and generally delight in your mirthful repartee. Bring your wife and Cyrus and his wife next time you visit Helena. And that's from Margaret Ann. Well, Margaret Ann, first of all, thank you. I sincerely appreciate you sharing on this topic. It's an important one, as you say. I don't recall joking about it. I really don't. But if, you know, in my treatment of the topic that came up, and I'm trying to remember the specific, I believe it was a phone call that began the topic discussion on the program. I think it was a gentleman who wanted to know, how come we never hear anything about gluttony? And he also, as I recall, said, you know, it's probably more prevalent than the very prevalent sin of looking at pornography. And I honestly don't remember joking. So if you heard me say something that came across as insensitive, without my going back and listening to it to get a sense of what was said. But as I remember, I don't think I intended to make light of it. So if it came across that way, my apologies, but I didn't mean it to be hurtful to you or anyone else for that matter. And thanks for listening. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Marie in River Falls, Wisconsin. Good morning, Marie.
Good morning, Patrick. Thanks so much for putting me on. I listen to you all the time, so it's really fun to be on.
Thank you.
I just was calling, Patrick, because I was listening to your show, and there was the father who called in about his teenage daughter who went to the doctor for some psycho health issues, and I just wanted to call and give a great resource that I'm super familiar with that helps women with this kind of thing that's very pro-life, very in line with our faith. It's called FEMM, F-E-M-M. And I was originally trained in it through my local pro-life pregnancy resource clinic, and it was being promoted by my diocese at the time. So it's kind of a natural family planning sort of system, but way simpler than like the Creighton and Marquette and those kind of things. So it's really good for young women too.
Basically, are we talking about
women?
If I can interrupt, are we talking about for the purposes of NFP or for some other purpose?
No, you can use it actually. So like you can use it for natural family planning purposes, but then we teach it at the pregnancy resource clinic where I work to just single women simply to understand their health. Because a lot of women nowadays go to the doctor and are told, yep, let's just put you on the pill and that'll regulate your cycles. But it doesn't get to the root cause of what's going on to cause those cycle issues. And it doesn't actually help women fix that underlying issue that's likely caused by a hormone imbalance. Mm-hmm. So what FEMM does, I'm almost certified in this program, so I kind of, I kind of understand it. But basically, it teaches women about their cycles, what to track, how to track it, what that means for their overall health and fertility. So again, if you're teaching it to young women, you don't have to bring in the fertility part. You can simply focus on the health piece. I personally used it to solve my own kind of health issues, and it was just a huge blessing that God brought into my life. So I just wanted to share the resource. There is a website. I work at a local pregnancy resource clinic in River Falls that teaches it. So if people have questions, they can absolutely call me. Is it okay if I give the name of the clinic on the air?
Yeah,
is that okay?
feel free to give the name of the clinic, but then we'll let people look you up, I'm sure they'll be able to find you. But yeah, what's the name of the clinic, Marie?
It's called Options for Women.
And that's in what town? Did you say it was River Falls?
River Falls, Wisconsin.
Got it. Options for Women. Well, that's very helpful. I appreciate that, Marie. And I'm glad to know you enjoy the show. Thank you. Appreciate that. While we're on the topic, before we press on, I want to give you, especially ladies or parents in general, moms and dads, especially if the doctor has said that your 13-year-old daughter needs to go on the pill because of some other issue that's not sexual in nature, take a look at a website called One More Soul. And their website address is onemoresoul.com. One More Soul. And under the contraception and abortion tab, you'll see a section on risks and consequences of taking contraception. And they cite studies. I was alluding to this earlier, and I wanted to get a little bit more hard data. And so this is a Catholic organization that provides it for you. And I'll just share with you a little bit from this website. So under the heading, What a Woman Should Know About Birth Control. According to the National Survey of Family Growth between the years of 2015 and 2017, the birth control pill was used by over 9 million women in the U.S. Over 37 million women used other methods of birth control, and almost 18 million of these were either sterilized or living with a sterilized man. Long-acting, reversible contraception, including the use of the intrauterine device and the implant, were used by more than 7 million women. And they get into some of the other methods of birth control. But then they zero in on the pill. They say the pill consists of one or more types of artificial hormones called estrogens and progestins. It works by inhibiting ovulation and sperm transport and by changing the lining of the inside of a woman's uterus called the endometrium so that implantation of a newly conceived embryo is unlikely. This is what I meant when I said that the pill is very often abortifacient. Not always, but very often it's abortifacient because it prevents implantation, which directly leads to an abortion. So they cite ethical concerns. When the pill works by preventing implantation of a recently conceived embryo, it produces an early abortion. Medical side effects. In 2005, the World Health Organization officially classified oral contraceptives as group 1 carcinogens, group 1 being the most dangerous from groups 1 through 4. A year later, a comprehensive meta-analysis published in the Mayo Clinic Proceedings noted that 21 out of 23 studies found an increased risk of developing premenopausal breast cancer in women who had taken the pill prior to the birth of their first child. This, by the way, and I'm going to pause here. This is why earlier, when I was just going from memory, I was saying that if at all possible, parents, I wouldn't put my daughter on the hormonal pill. And the reason is because of what appears to be a strong correlation between taking the pill and getting breast cancer later in life. So this is sort of corroborating what I was alluding to. So I'll repeat this last sentence. They did this meta-analysis, and it was published in Mayo Clinic Proceedings, noted that 21 out of 23 studies found an increased risk of developing premenopausal breast cancer in women who had taken the pill prior to the birth of their first child. Overall, this group of women experienced a 44% increased risk in developing breast cancer prior to age 50. Other side effects that women have experienced include high blood pressure, blood clots, strokes, heart attacks, depression, weight gain, and migraines. Although the pill decreases the risk of ovarian and uterine cancer, it increases the risk of breast, liver, and cervical cancer. At least 3 studies have noted that the AIDS virus is transmitted more easily to women who are taking the pill if their partners have the AIDS virus. Now, they get into other things like the Depo-Provera shot, other hormonal contraceptives, the morning after pill, and they talk about a variety of other things. And they lay out in fine detail what are the health and medical consequences and risks associated with these things. Then they also talk about, by way of comparison, natural family planning. So one of the reasons that natural family planning is becoming more and more popular is because it's entirely natural. There are no chemicals. There are no barriers. There are no surgeries. There's nothing bad for the woman's body. For that matter, don't forget that the hormones in the birth control pill, they pass into the environment, into the groundwater. You ever wondered why, like, fish are getting weird and doing weird things and looking weird and having sex oddities among the fish? I'm referring to male and female. I don't have it in front of me, but I've read articles that that show that there seems to be a correlation between the hormones in the pill that get into the toilet. Obviously, when you go to the bathroom, that goes into the groundwater. It's not filtered out, and it gets into the environment. So bad for the woman, bad for her health, bad for the environment. It's just bad. And I would refer you to this page if you want details. So the gentleman who called me earlier in the show today, whose daughter has been told by the physicians that she needs to get on the pill, well, I would say read this first before you do anything. And that way you can make an informed medical decision on behalf of your daughter. Let's go to Mary in Houston, Texas. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning.
Hi,
Patrick. So I have been just tuned in time to listen to a few pieces about this transgender Barbie.
Yeah.
And I thought, I am a subscriber to Catholic Vote. I watch their news. They have, as you may know, a campaign going on about Hide the Pride, checking out books in the library that are set up in a display to advertise Pride Month, and mm-hmm. parents are checking these books out in order to remove them from display. And so I thought, why don't we do something similar like that in the stores, and instead of purchasing all these trans Barbies in order to get them off the shelf, removing them and putting them in a very different, unnoticed place in the store. Would that be wrong?
Well, you know, there may be a bit of a fine line there. It's not stealing, obviously, so you're not doing that. If you're tampering with the store's wares and you have a good reason to want to do that. I remember when we would go in the grocery store checkout line Very frequently, my mom and or my dad would take the tabloid papers that are right there where the candy and batteries and everything are, right as you're, those are the impulse items that you didn't go to the store for, but you buy them at the last minute while you're waiting for your groceries to be checked out. And they would very often just turn them around. They would take it out, turn it around so that the last page of the tabloid was facing out, not the girl in the bikini that was on the front page. They did it for us, but I think they did it for other people. Is that wrong? No, I don't think it's wrong. It might be going further down that road, though, if you're actually tampering with things and moving them to a different part of the store, kind of like a form of sabotage. I think that would be a gray area, honestly, Mary. So maybe the better way to handle it would be complain about it. You know, not that the store manager can necessarily do anything, but if you expressed your concern and said, well, I don't want to shop here until you get rid of those things, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. Yes, absolutely. And I just want to tell you, I do the same thing with the magazines. Mm-hmm. When I'm standing in the store and it's offensive, then I turn it around. Or I move it to the back, or I move that out, because I think that there are more of us who are offended by it than we make out to be. You know, silence is the voice of complicity. And I don't want to be compliant in this. I think that God puts it on our hearts to not be compliant about this. But thank you. And so again, this campaign with Catholic Vote is a way to resist and be respectful. And so I just wanted to offer that up as a thought for our listeners.
It's a good thought. I appreciate it very much. We have to be creative. What did Jesus say? Wise as serpents and harmless as doves. So we shouldn't do anything wrong or immoral or violent, but we can still be creative. And I think that's a good thing, Mary. Thank you. When we return, I haven't forgotten. I am going to share with you a few things that I mentioned, including how is it that people are bullied into silence? I'll show how that happens right after this. Oh.